purusha adhisthitat.
Purusha adhisthitat.
Because of the Purusha incarnation of the Lord.
Because of the Purusha incarnation of the Lord.
Abhut.
Abhut.
It took place.
It took place.
Kalad guna vyatikara parinama svabhavataha karmano janma mahata purush adi sthitad abhut. After the incarnation of the first Purusha, Karan Arna Vasai Vishnu, the Mahat Tattva, right there, or the principles, somebody's scratching your microphone, making noise. The Mahat Tattva, or the principles of material creation take place. And then time is manifested in the course. In course of time, the three qualities appear. Nature means the three qualitative appearances. They transform into activities. After the incarnation, so then I kind of broke it down into because the we call it translation is very dense. This whole section is very dense. Brahma is the engineer who creates the universe, And so, I'll tell you how it works. It's like, first you take this and that. It's like incredibly, incredibly sophisticated, to understand how the universe was created. Prabhupada calls the modern scientists fifth class scientists. And of course, we're their students. So being students of a fifth class teacher, trying to understand from a first class teacher talking to a better than first class student, how the universe is created, we're obviously at an extreme disadvantage here. But we're going to try and go ahead. On my slideshow, I have a little picture of a man sitting under an apple tree with an apple falling on his head. This is how Newton discovered gravity supposedly, when an apple fell on his head. Okay, after the incarnation of the first Purusha, after the incarnation of the first Purusha, that immediately raises a question, because we're not talking about the first Purusha, we're talking about the incarnation of the first Purusha. So the incarnation of the first Purusha, because the first Purusha doesn't actually incarnate. The first Purusha is Karana Arna Vasai Vishnu, causal ocean Vishnu. And he exists eternally, in the spiritual world. When there's nothing manifested, he's still there like that. He's expanded, from the Shankarshan? Somebody there. Shankarshan Prajna Vadi Vasudeva. Like that. And then, of course, there's expansion of Balaram, like that. But these are all eternal. They all exist forever. So after the incarnation of the first Purusha, so the incarnation of the first Purusha would actually be Garbhadaksha Vishnu. Garbhadaksha Vishnu. Okay. And from his body are coming all these little perspiration particles, We breathe out, of course. You can breathe on a mirror, a cold mirror, and you see the fog condensing, or, you can feel that. You can actually see the vapors there. If you breathe on your glasses, then rub them down to get something off of them. Also, your body actually has pores, When was the Dr. Something, I forgot his name. He was a guy in the Philippines that we were dealing with a little bit. And one of his treatments was just to take a sheet, full-size bed sheet, and just put it in soak it in a little salt water. And so it was damp. It was, wettish kind of salt water. And then wrap his patient up in it, And then after maybe 10, 15 minutes, you take it off, and the whole sheet would be kind of a yellowish, dirty color sometimes, and stink like that, And so it was this sucking, you know, sucking the fluids out of the body through all the pores like that. And so you really, really appreciated that this body is actually not, it doesn't have a real boundary with the world. It's actually interacting quite a bit, you know. And the skin actually produces, has a process of photosynthesis. So morning sunlight's very good on the skin, exposes as much skin as possible, because there's vitamin D synthesis from contact with the sunlight, as we understand. So actually, we're actually quite involved with the atmosphere around us, the physical growth of the air, and these elements like that. So same way, Mahavishnu, his body, are coming all these little particles, and each of those little particles of perspiration or vapor from the breath is a universe. Now begin to understand how many universes there are. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, then he enters into each of those little particles as Garbhadakshay Vishnu. So even in terms of just appreciating God, God is great. Yeah. Which one? You know. So we even going from Garbhadakshay Vishnu to Mahavishnu is a gigantic step. You know. And how is it different? So he incarnates. He takes a carnal form, you know, meat form, something, yeah, and enters into each universe, you know. So the analogy we use, of course, is that, you know, there's the government, the king, and then there's the minister of prisons, minister of recreation, all these kind of things, you know. So the minister of prisons means he sends all the elements. He sends steel, cement, blueprints, water, all these things to a certain location. You know? And then the warden shows up. Okay, so the minister of prisons is Kara Mahavishnu, and then Garbhadakshay Vishnu is the prison warden. You know? So this is Sarga. This is the creation by Mahavishnu. And Visarga is a creation by Brahma. And then after that, there's one more, which is a creation by the Manus. And these all, of course, we describe at the end of the second canto. And each canto is given these names by Prabhupada. The first one's creation, then something else, secondary creation or something. So the Manus, of course, they create all the species, the animals, like that. You know. So starting off, it says, after the incarnation of the first Purusha, the Mahat Tattva, or great truth, or great fact, or great, you know, Tattva, you know, truth, or the principles of material creation take place. So Mahat Tattva is just the principles, just the very fact of the thing, you know, of material creation, takes place. Okay, and then. So Garbhadakshay Vishnu is there. And this, of course, we described, I think, a couple times in the second canto here. Brahma's describing it now, but in the later chapters it'll be described again, I think, from a different perspective, maybe two different perspectives. And then when we go into the third canto, Maitreya describes it again, you know, one time, in more detail over several chapters. Then Kapila, when he's describing it to his mother, describes it again. And in the fourth canto, it's not described, I don't think it's described in terms of creation. What it's described is in terms of dissolution. And dissolution is basically the same thing, but it goes backwards. You know? Yeah. So many times it's described, and hearing it again and again and again, we begin to get some appreciation for what it's talking about. Yeah. And then the material world changes. And we see how, our perspective, our perception of the world around us changes. Okay, so after the incarnation of the first Purusha, the Mahatattva, or the principles, or the principle of material creation takes place, and then time is manifested. Okay, and in course of time, you have a course here, the river course. In the course of time, three qualities appear. Okay? Nature means the three qualities. Nature means the three qualitative appearances. So what is the word Sanskrit word for nature? They transform into activities. Okay. Now, Prabhupada's purport. By the omnipotency of the Supreme Lord, the whole material creation evolves by the process of transformation and reactions one after another. I think that's the Sanskrit word is parinama. And by the same omnipotency, okay, somebody's complaining, by the same omnipotency, they are wound up again, one after another, and conserved in the body of the Supreme. Kala, this is interesting, because I think, what is it? There's this word can be Kala, 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 or Kala. You can make the first and second A short or long, and one means black, one means culture, and this one, Kala, means time. And I guess the fourth one doesn't mean anything. Kala, or time, is the synonym of nature. Okay, time is a synonym of nature. And is transformed by manifestation of the principles of material creation. Principles of material creation were, of course, the Mahatattva. Okay. Sometimes Prabhupada says that all there is the Mahatattva. You know, the Mahatattva he also describes as the sum total of material intelligence. My intelligence. My intelligence, I manipulate matter, but matter is actually supreme. No. Matter is actually a product of your intelligence. Yeah. And the supreme intelligence, the Mahatattva, is all there is. And then when it becomes divided, it becomes broken into different parts like that. Kala or time is a synonym of nature. And is transformed, and is a transformed manifestation of the principles of material creation. Okay. As such, Kala may be taken as the first cause of all creation. So it seems that Prabhupada is talking about, he's not talking about the principles of creation anymore, he's talking about creation. And by transformation of different activities of the material, and by transformation of nature, different activities of the material world become visible. These activities may be taken up as the natural instinct of each and every living being, or even the inert objects. Yeah. And after the manifestation of activities, okay, down to activities now, there are varieties of products and byproducts of the same nature. Yeah. Any questions? Yeah. Extremely complicated, sophisticated, extremely intellectual, you know, for me at least. Yeah, probably everybody else got this all figured out. Yeah. The ladies will explain it in terms of baking a cake. Yeah, well, this and that. You mix that, and that performs that, and you put it in the fire. Yeah. First you desire it. If you think about it, everybody from their own perspective, then we can see how something, what is a cake? Well, the cake is, there has to be activity, you know, and because of activity, there are varieties of products and byproducts. Okay, yeah. But before that, of course, there's, you know, the different elements that manipulate the ingredients and are not in the result. Your pan and your spoon are not a part of the final cake, but they're necessary for manipulating it. You know? And before that is a desire and on like that. You know? So very, what's the word? This is jnana. This is sankhya, you know, sankhya yoga, talking about it. So Prabhupada says these activities may be taken up as a natural instinct of each and every living being, or even the inert objects. So the natural instinct, what is the natural instinct of water? To moisten. Yeah, you got it. Okay. What is the natural instinct of fire? To burn. Yeah. And also to illuminate. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, so they all have their, you see what we call this is dharma too, no? The dharma of sugar is sweetness. You know, what svaipumsam paro dharmo. Pumsam, what is the dharma of the pumsam of people? So people have their dharma, human beings. Human beings have their dharma, they have their natural instinct, like that. Yeah. Okay, we come down here. Originally, these are all due to the Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada comes back to that in this verse. And it's something that Brahma is emphasizing. The tendency, the, you know, the kapila bodies, you know, they tend to analyze everything else and kind of get caught up in a detailed explanation. You know? When we have these you know, modern physicists who try to understand nature, it's amazing if you go back and look at the history. They understood some chemical elements, alkaline, acid, and they categorized different things, and they would, you know, collect them and get different reactions. And so, of course, I would say, you know, it goes back a lot in the West to Aristotle. And Aristotle was categorizing everything. He was taking this Sankhya approach. What's the word? Sankhya. Yeah. But there's also, besides Sankhya, another word for it too. Okay. But it means the same thing. Oh, yeah. Oh, boy, it's Nyaya. It means to break everything down, to use logics, to give everything a name, to put them in categories, you know, subcategories, to establish relationships between the categories, and that way to understand nature. And we're so used to it, we think that this is what it means to understand something, to break the bicycle down into parts, to explain the relationship of the parts. So now I understand the bicycle. But it came into popularity in Lord Chaitanya's time. It was expanded to become Navanyaya, you know. And in the West also, it's a kind of Yatravidhi. It's what, what's his name? Mayadhanava gave to Arjuna. Yatravidhi, the knowledge of machines, of breaking things down into all these categories. And Krishna didn't recommend it like that. You know, it's a way of dealing with nature. You know? Try to make your family into an efficient machine. You know? Try to make your business into an efficient machine. Yeah. So I went through Aristotle, and in the West, people were going ahead from the Greeks, and Democritus had some kind of atomistic idea. Different people had different things. You know? And then Thomas Aquinas came in contact with translations of Aristotle's ideas. Of course, Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, those are the disciples. And he was the advisor of Alexander the Great, and being supported quite well living in Egypt. Yeah. So Thomas Aquinas came in contact with Arabic translations of Aristotle's works and decided, yeah, this is the way to explain Christianity, because somehow or other this Nyaya and reason and rationality were coming up in Europe, and it was a little bit of a challenge to the church, which was just do it, Prabhu. Don't ask. Don't understand, Prabhu. You know, the Bible says. You know. And so then he adopted this idea. Then the Pope supported him and made him the official, acharya for the Catholic Church. There's other history involved here too, but you can see how we have developed a certain view of nature, and the cause behind it as God, and how it's all kinds of like speculative writing by these church fathers in the different centuries like that to develop this, and rebellion and response, and, you know, coming down to the modern philosophers, the physicists, you know, and what is it, atomic theory, quantum mechanics. I think the two biggest explanations were something like quantum mechanics and relativity. Of course, it's Einstein being big acharya in many ways. But Einstein and Bohr would had debates, fight, you know, over like how nature worked and everything else. And Bohr had a little different idea, you know, of how it was working. He was considered a bit, criticized of being a mystic more than a physicist. And very much his ideas were like that, you know, which because all this stuff we're discussing right now is a big mystery to us. What's he talking about? You know? It's very, 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 very subtle. You know? And so this is how Brahma is giving his description of all this. You know? And the natural instinct of each living, of the matter, the natural instinct of living entities, time factor. And Prabhupada continues, originally these are all due to the Supreme Lord. The Vedanta Sutras and the Bhagavatam thus begin with the absolute truth as the beginning of all creations. Jamari Yasya Yataha, Srimad Bhagavatam 1:1:1. Yeah. Okay. Now, what I have here, I guess that's the end of the purport. Yeah, that's the end of the purport. But of course, this really, really falls, you know, if you take each purport separately, it's kind of like, you know, somebody handing you a box and look at it and they, what is this, you know? So it's a little metal, you know, pointer, you know, it's a little metal disc with numbers on it. There's a little wheels with, you know, teeth in them, you know? So what is this, you know? Well, it's a wristwatch, you know, mechanical wristwatch, yeah. So taking these verses individually, what we're looking at right now, I think makes it even more incomprehensible in some degree. Yeah. So kind of looking at them all by one here, 2:5:17 through 20 through 22, Lord Brahma says, inspired by him only, I discover what is already created by him, Narayan, under his vision as the all-pervading supersoul, and I also am created by him only. The Supreme Lord is pure spiritual form, transcendental to all material qualities. Yet, for the sake of the creation of the material world and its maintenance and annihilation, okay, he accepts through his external energy the material modes of nature called goodness, passion, and ignorance. So Brahma's taking us right into the material creation here. Okay? Then it goes on. These three modes of material nature being further manifested as matter, knowledge, and activities put the eternally transcendental living entities under conditions of cause and effect and make him responsible for such activities. So the Sanskrit here, trying to catch it, matter is dravya, knowledge is jnana, and number three, activities, I couldn't quite figure out whether it's kartritve or kriya ashraya. Yeah. 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 So these three modes of material nature being further manifested as matter, knowledge, and activities, okay? And it seems that these are actually manifested from the mode of ignorance, all three of these, you know? We actually come in, because they manifest goodness and passion and ignorance, and out of, and then in ignorance we get matter, knowledge, and activities. Okay. Put the eternally transcendental living entity, and this seems to be the most important point, because we don't care about the, you know, Aristotle and all these guys, everything else. It's so much what we're really concerned about is just seeing all this from the point of view of how to get out of it. Not how to become extremely sophisticated in manipulating it, becoming famous as an Ayurvedic physician. Yeah. Yeah. Put the eternally transcendental living into the under conditions of cause and effect. Okay, there's some more Sanskrit words. And make him responsible for such activities. So it seems that we're coming down here, and after we've created matter, and then knowledge of that matter, because the matter is there, now we know about it. Then, because we know about it, we can engage in activities with it. Okay, then it's just like the tar baby story, Brer Fox and Brer Rabbit. Okay, you know, the more you try and punch the tar baby to get free from him, the more you get entangled. The activities based on our knowledge of matter, put the eternally transcendental living entity under conditions of cause and effect. Okay, and now we're trapped up by this thing. You hit the tar baby, then your face gets, your head, hand gets stuck. You butt the tar baby with your head, you know, your head gets stuck. You kick him with your foot gets stuck. You know, there's a cause and an effect, and the effect then, if we try and fight the effect, that causes another cause, another reaction, which also becomes a cause. And make him responsible for such activities. So that's the whole tip, is that we identify this. The whole motivating force behind this is our desire, our motivation, which everybody this week I've been listening to has been touching on this point. This is the whole thing, you know, because we desire, because we, you know, we're trying to use our Shakti, our creative potency, not to give it to Krishna, but to give it to Maya, you know. Then we feel that we're the cause of all these things, and we become entangled and responsible for the activities. We feel guilty. Oh my God, I did this. Oh my God, I did that. Oh, they're going to find out. Oh, I'm in big trouble. Oh, they're going to reward me. Okay, let's go on here. O Brahma, Narada, the superseer, the transcendent Lord. Yeah, it's beyond the perception of the material senses of a living being, living entities, because of the above-mentioned three modes of material nature. He is the controller of everyone, including me. Okay. So it's kind of like Lord Brahma's going into it and coming back out, going into it and coming back out. The Lord, who is the controller of all energies, and we're going to this controller in both verses, who is the controller of all energies, thus creates by his own potency, one, eternal time, the fate of all living entities and their particular nature. Yeah. Kalam, time, karma, nature, and swabhavam, for which they were created, and he again merges them independently. After the creation of the first Purusha, Karanarna Vasai Vishnu, the Mahatattva, or the the Mahatattva, or the principle of material creation, takes place. Yeah. Then time is manifested, and in the course of time, the three qualitative appearances, three qualities appear. Nature means the three qualitative appearances, they transform into activities. Okay. Then just to kind of go on, kind of finish off here, I think if we go back then to, I think after this we're getting right into the details then of the gross elements like that. Let's go to the next verse. Mahatas tu vi kurvanad, is tomorrow's verse, or Monday's verse. Material activities are caused by the Mahatattvas being agitated. At first there is transformation of goodness and passion, and later, due to the mode of ignorance, matter, its knowledge, and different activities of material knowledge come into play. Like that. Okay. So tomorrow's verse, Monday's verse, involves a lot of this explanation too, for this whole thing too. So at this point, I guess I kind of like, you know, ask if any questions or comments, because it's a really big topic. Like I explained, after this, Brahma will explain it again. Then Maitreya will explain it. Then Kapila will explain it. And then we've already had it explained in terms of the disappearance of the Pandavas retire timely. At that point, it describes the reverse process, how Yudhisthira, you know, wound up this element into that element into this element into that element, you know, and then disappeared and became this and that. So Prabhupada doesn't give much explanation there. He said basically he became Krishna conscious. Then, of course, in the disappearance of Bhishma Dev, I think also the same thing is also there in the reverse order. And it's important because Prabhupada said this is what we have to do. It doesn't matter whether you're doing Sankhya Yoga or Astanga Yoga, or you're doing Bhakti Yoga. You have to do this. You have to wind up one element into the other. And, of course, we do this, you know, by our process, which is Gandharva Veda, singing and dancing, especially singing and dancing, you know, we're moving the prana and everything else, and we cease to identify with the kartals, and now we're simply using them as tools. and we're seeing how much of the actual kartal action is being carried out by our body. Our body is naturally rhythmical, and if we condition it in a certain way, get it going, then it develops that. It forms into that kind of rhythm, you know, so on. And then we can see the different elements like that being created, and this as is described here in the kirtan, everything else like that, so on. And then we can, pratyahara. Then we have to do this. We have to withdraw, you know, from the senses, the sense objects, senses. And then we withdraw back to the prana, and then finally to the mind, and how the mind is actually, you know, the element which is motivating the entire kirtan. And of course we're there, but now we're participating in an enlightened form. We're not so stupid that we're identifying with the kartals, you know, but the kartals are there doing their thing. The kartals jingle. That's their instinct. Kartals sing, you know. So we can manipulate them now from a much higher platform, you know. And then we go back like that, you know. And so our kirtan finally comes right from the soul, from the heart, you know, like that. So, any comments, questions, complaints?
Anybody have anything?
Hare Bol Maharaj, this is Mahesh from Kona.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Yes, you were mentioning...
Your wife and I are what do you call it, nationals. Remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, we're both born on Guam. We're both born on Guam.
Yes.
We're natives. She and I are both native. I'm a native of Guam.
Yes. Well, anyway, I would just wanted you to clarify this. At the beginning of the class, you were speaking about the expansion of the first Purusha into Garbhodaksha Vishnu.
The incarnation of the first Purusha.
But Prabhupada says in the Bhagavatam that Vishnu actually is never in touch with matter. That is Shiva. In other words, that when Vishnu incarnates actually into this world and becomes in touch with the material nature, then it is Shiva. You know, Lord Shiva is the actual first manifestation of the Supreme Lord in the material world. So, can you elaborate on that?
Yes, sir. Let's go back to the original verses. The Supreme Lord is pure spiritual form. Okay, it's verse number 18. 2518. Okay. You got that? 2518. Mask off my screen here. Okay. Yeah. The Supreme Lord is pure spiritual form, transcendental to all material qualities. Yet for the sake of the creation of the material world and its maintenance and annihilation, he accepts through his external energy, okay, the material modes of nature called. So there it is. It's through his external energy. It's just like, you know, you want to play with the kitty cat. The kitty cat is dirty and this and that. So you have a piece of yarn with a little piece of paper tied to it. So you start bouncing in front of the kitty cat, and the kitty cat loves to play with it. And sometimes he'll sink his claws right into it and bite it, you know. And so it doesn't, you know, but your skin, your little delicate skin, you're not bothered by that. So the yarn is your energy. It's your external energy. Yeah. And Shiva is, Prabhupada says, yeah, Shiva is the functional, he's the functional material body of the Supreme Lord. Like that. He's the incarnation of the mode of ignorance. The incarnation of Tamagun. Yeah. Is okay? It's discussed.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Thank you, Swamiji.
Yeah, it's discussed more and more and more like that. But that's why, see, going over this again, I see like subtle things that Prabhupada said like this, you know, exactly your point there. So Vishnu doesn't come in contact with the material world. Okay, any other comments, questions?
Raj, you're talking about kirtan.
and chanting. First you said chanting from the mind, then a moment or two later you said chanting from the heart, which sounded much sweeter to me. What tips do you have in chanting? And I assume this is all going to apply to the holy name, and as well as our Gayatri, etc. And even when we're speaking Vaishnava philosophy, I guess it all ties in. How do we do that more from our heart than from our mind and from our false ego?
Yeah. I think this, of course, you know, is a big topic, no? The whole Bhagavatam pretty much is based upon this. What's the verse you quoted? Thank you so much for quoting verses. You know, it stimulates me. I'm supposed to be memorizing them. Satam prasangat mama virya sam vidho.
Bhavanti hritkarna rasayana katha tajoshana ashpapavargavatmini shadha ratir bhaktir anukramishyati.
And there's your process, you know. Prasanta sangha. That by basically we don't do much, you know, but we can put ourselves in the right association like that. If you want to stop drinking, put yourself in the association of people who don't drink. If you want to start becoming an alcoholic, put yourself in the association of people who are alcoholics. You'll develop the same attitude, the same anxieties, the same solutions. You know, yeah. So that's the process, really, is how to associate with devotees. And, of course, Upadeshamrita 4, 5, 6, I'm going to give very nice detail, summary of the process. But the Bhagavatam, the other process, is like, you know. And so, you know, how do we chant good rounds? By reading the Bhagavatam, you know, by hearing Prabhupada's japa, his kirtan, by associating with devotees who are sincere about it. You know. As we become conscious of these things, we have some ability then to consciously control our senses, to consciously control our mind. So I'm chanting, my tongue and jaw are chanting. And then I start to become conscious of my mind, but my mind is thinking about, you know, what can I have for lunch? You know, what's going to happen? Okay. So then I can control my mind. Okay. And the mind can become, mind thinks. So I can think about the mantra, you know, and willing. I can will to chant the mantra. You know, so on. Then the next level is buddhi. That's the attitude, the perspective. So I can cultivate a different attitude. You know, I'm chanting because I want mystical powers, I want separation, you know. So on. Yeah. Somebody's breathing into the microphone. Hurricane going there. Yeah. So if I'm at that level, that's my level, then I can pick out different verses and read those and meditate, and I can chant with that attitude. Or I want to distribute books. I want to serve you. I want to distribute books. I'm chanting, praying. You know? So therefore, we can chant in the mood of different prayers like that and so on. But that's a cultivation of the buddhi. You know? So that's some perspective. Yeah?
It's very nice. Thank you. I especially like, well, everything you said is right on. Somehow it just especially rings associating with the advanced devotees. And you were making reference to the verse of Kapila Dev, yeah. Satang Prasangan, the association prasanga, which means the best. Sangha's association, but prasanga means the best association.
Aha. Bhabhava.
That's why I like to hang out with Madan Mohan.
He's one of the big four.
Maharaj, this is Madhukanta Das.
Ah, okay.
And I wanted to read something from a book called A Guide for the Perplexed by E.F. Schumacher. No, this is a different one.
Oh, a different one. Maimedius is a Jewish, gigantic Jewish philosopher who wrote A Guide for the Perplexed also.
And I wondered if you were familiar with this E.F. Schumacher's A Guide for the Perplexed.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. No. What is it?
Anyway, it's a.
Is that
he wrote Small is Beautiful, which was a big thing in the early 70s.
Yeah.
He was an economist. Anyway, he's talking about how science just deals with the senses and dead matter, and we need to go beyond that. And so he says, great pride is taken in this voluntary limitation of the limitless intellect to the, quote, art of the soluble, unquote. Quote, good scientists say, says P.B. Medawar, study the most important problems they think they can solve. It is, after all, their professional business to solve problems, not merely to grapple with them. End quote. This is fair enough. It clearly demonstrates at the same time that good scientists, in this sense, can deal only with the dead aspect of the universe. But the real problems of life have to be grappled with. To repeat the quotation from Thomas Aquinas, the slenderest knowledge that may be obtained of the highest things is more desirable than the most certain knowledge obtained of lesser things. And grappling with the help of slender knowledge is the real stuff of life, whereas solving problems which, to be soluble, must be convergent, with the help of the most certain knowledge obtained of lesser things, is merely one of the many useful and perfectly honorable human activities designed to save labor. While the logical mind abhors divergent problems and tries to run away from them, the higher faculties of man accept the challenges of life as they are offered, without complaint, knowing that when things are most contradictory, absurd, difficult, and frustrating, then, just then, life really makes sense as a mechanism provoking and almost forcing us to develop towards higher levels of being. The question is one of faith, of choosing our own grade of significance. Our ordinary mind always tries to persuade us that we are nothing but acorns, and that our greatest happiness will be to become bigger, fatter, shinier acorns. But that is of interest only to pigs. Our faith gives us knowledge of something much better, that we can become oak trees. Anyway, it's very nice.
I would say we disagree with him. Everything's very nice, you know. There are many points there. Was about like almost near the end, the last two points. Because sometimes the frustrations and all this kind of stuff and the contradictions and the paradoxes are not to stimulate us to go to higher things. So I would say sometimes they are, but sometimes they're just Maya's stupidity to make us more angry, more frustrated, and to go into stupidity. So it's not that paradoxes and all this kind of stuff is always constructive. That's what I would wonder about that. Sometimes, yeah, it is. And the other point is that going back to become trees, okay, but is that Mayavad and his ultimate issue that we're all going to become the supreme controller and the ultimate issue? That's what, you know, I don't know, because he doesn't go beyond that. We become petite Ishwaras, you know. But right here from the very beginning, Lord Brahma is saturating his Sankhya with a perspective of a supreme controller, you know, like that, you know. Not much more,
right.
not Rasaraj, but like Ishwara, you know. So she seems very nice. Thank you for bringing that. What's the author's name again?
E.F. Schumacher.
Schumacher. Was he the guy also who had the Course in Miracles, or that was somebody else?
That was someone else.
Yeah
actually,
yeah.
Prabhupada met and spoke with Schumacher. There was they had some dialogue, I think.
Ah.
And definitely it seems like he is influenced by, you know, impersonalism. But he has a really good challenge against the scientist's whole. He calls it scientism,
That was Einstein's phrase.
Hmm.
Have you read Quantum Questions?
No, I haven't.
You'll love it. It's Ken Wilber. He is nothing but, practically speaking, nothing but an anthology of the philosophical writings of all the modern scientists, Einstein, de Broglie, James Jean. And that's what Einstein said. He said when science tries to deal with these questions like that, which is not designed to deal with, it was never set up to deal with, it's not science, it's scientism.
Yeah.
So quantum questions, you really love it. It's very useful in terms of these kind of, you know, dialogues and preaching like that. Yeah. Is Schumacher's Jewish, no?
I think that might be, or German maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not sure.
Because Maimonides is like, I don't know, maybe like the 17th century, 16th century. And as I remember, his book is also written called A Guide for the Perplexed. And he's considered, like, from our, you know, investigation, one of the biggest of all the Jewish philosophers. And he goes through these things, like the same thing, you know, we're talking about. But he says, not only is God impersonal, God must be impersonal. Yeah, yeah. And so the general Jewish explanation, I've heard people explaining it, like big varieties of Jews, you know. But anyway, the general perspective is that, yes, you know, God's a person, but he's always going to be a more advanced than we are. And so what we're going to see is his footprints. You know? And so, yeah, so it's kind of like Paramatma Bodh is the highest they say you can come to. As you can see, there's footprints here. I can follow those. I can, you know, do what they say. But you're never going to catch up with God as a person. It's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. And so with some of them, when they come in contact with these very high-level discussions like this, then they begin to be very stimulated. Yeah. Like that. Yeah. Where are you, Prabhu? Are you in Boston, Miami?
I'm on the Big Island.
Okay, the Big Island. Goloka.
John.
Maharaj, I have a question for you.
Okay.
In this verse, it gives the word Parinama. And,
yeah.
Of course, we know that the Shakti Parinama is the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's how he emphasizes this is the understanding, you know, from the Vedanta Sutra, Atman Krite Parinama, the whole philosophy of, you know, how this world is a transformation of the energies of the Lord.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, Mayavad philosophy is pointing out that, Shankaracharya points out that Parinama, that could not be because that would mean the Absolute is transformed. Anyway, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, Prabhu.
So, pari, my understanding, pari means from, and nama is transformation. From transformation, the world proceeds.
Okay.
So, nama means name. How does it mean transformation? Can you tell me?
Are we talking about nama or nama?
Well, isn't that a long A? It's got the dot under the N. So.
Yeah, I mean, also it could be nama, because the dot under the N is changed to retroflex, nama. Nama, nama, yeah. Nama or nama. Nama, nama, nama or nama, okay. Krishna.
So nama means name, but this is a different word entirely.
I don't know. Yeah, it may be two different words like that, yeah. Yeah, but it may also be related in that sense that there's Krishna, you know, and the nama is like the transformation of Krishna, of the person, you know, Purusha, nama, rupa, like that. So it may be related like that. You know, there was a very subtle relationship that the name of something, the nama, is the designation, it is like the first transformation of the thing. You get the peach,
oh,
and you get
okay.
The word. You get the word peach. That's, you know, one of my speculations there. But it may be a different word too. It may be nama nama and nama and nama. You know, like bhava and bhava. Yeah, yeah. But it's very nice. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maharaj.
Well, one more point, because sometimes I my own, and I understand all this, you know, it seems that what we understand that the mind is over the intelligence here, in one of these descriptions. But then one Russian devotee, senior guy, said, "Well, no, because the acharya said what it's talking about here is material knowledge, and so there's the jnana on the level in the mode of goodness, and there's jnana also manifest again in the mode of ignorance, and that's the knowledge, you know, the knowledge of matter, you know, of how to manipulate matter as opposed to the knowledge of, you know, of matter from perspective." So, it again, the hierarchy here does seem to be saying that the last one is talking about matter, knowledge, and activities are coming one after another, and they're all in the mode of ignorance. You know, so this is jnana in the mode of ignorance, you know, like that. Yes, yes, Prabhu.
Wonderbar. Something you just said kind of caught my attention. The Jewish philosopher that we can see God's footprints, but we can't catch up to his personal feature. And that was in Achintya Thakur, but at the same time, there's an interesting point that if a devotional theist positions themselves correctly, the Lord, his personal feature, can reveal himself. So that would be a theistic point to make in that situation. As a personal theist, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati would say, don't try to see God, but try to act in such a way that God will want to see you. In other words, if you become into his mercy, if he decides that you're worthy and trust, you know, he trusts to reveal himself, he'll do so.
Yeah, so we were saying earlier, right? We don't do much at all. is that most part of our job is just trying to keep our mouth open so the food can go in rather than close it and have it go all over our face.
Yeah, we're trying to become fit to come into his presence.
Yeah, wow. That's the other day I was thinking that if you want to enjoy nectar, that's Indraloka. If you want to become nectar, that's Goloka. So I guess everybody's ready to go out and create their own universe now. Step back from your body and see how your body is part of the whole universe, and start to shake your body in such a fashion that the whole universe starts to become agitated. Of course, in Dhruva Maharaj too, I didn't mention that. I forgot about that. Dhruva Maharaj also, there's this whole Sankhya is being presented also. Yeah. So, you know, it's very, very essential. And I actually could see it sometimes by thinking about this, looking at the material nature. What, you know, Buddha says you should look at the world from 2 inches behind your eyeballs, you know, like that. Okay. Things like that, it's the same thing. You start to become like that. You start to become detached from the world and everything else, experiences of your senses. You start to look at, for example, I hit my toe on something, you know. Ordinarily, I just scream and yell and complain and hop up and down. But there's a little tendency from chanting everything else is to stop and experience without making a judgment or something. You see what happens, and it's interesting. Okay, and then it's not even really even pain anymore. It's just an experience, and it's sending out intense waves that are paralyzing your other senses, and, you know, destroying your false ego of I'm the controller, and so pain is to a large degree. Yeah. So our view of the world, as we hear about this and try to understand it, you know, and use it, then we start to see the world differently, you know. And then our kirtans and everything else become different, how we're chanting. I guess maybe we'll kind of finish here, 12:06, on Ekadasi, and, you know, take a bath and chant Hare Krishna.
Our Ekadasi was yesterday.
Ah, okay. You guys are more advanced than we are.
We're ahead of you. Okay, thank you very much, Maharaj.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Jai, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Haribol.
Hi, Bishop.
Hi.
Haribol.
Haribol.
Haribol.